Hello, and thanks for joining Wicker Park Lutheran Church Sermons. Wicker Park Lutheran Church is a diverse ELCA Lutheran congregation in the Wicker Park neighborhood of Chicago. We gather at 10 a.m. to fully live into our incarnational faith as we experience God's presence in the gathered assembly, and we welcome you to join us. In just a moment, you'll first hear with a gospel reading from the associated sermon for the service that you're about to listen to. We hope that that gospel gives you some context before you jump right into the sermon. Thanks for checking us out, and we hope to see you soon.
The Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus and asked him,
"Are you the king of the Judeans?"
Jesus answered,
"Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?"
Pilate replied,
"I am not one of them, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?"
Jesus answered,
"My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the temple authorities. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here."
"So you are a king?"
"You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice."
The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Well, today's readings really don't feel quite like Advent to me. I mean, during Advent, we usually hear of a pregnant Mary or an angel's visit to Joseph, and maybe even a little bit about John the Baptist. So what in the world is Pilate doing in today's story? I mean, he's a character for Holy Week, right? So what in the world is going on with this Advent season? Well, as we continue in this historical 7-week-long Advent, we are continually opened to God's revelation and the deepening of our faith by looking at scriptures in new ways. This extended Advent kind of necessitates that we look at these texts through different lenses than maybe we're used to, and it's a little uncomfortable. But today, what we're able to do is look at the readings that we're presented with and explore the essence of Advent that goes beyond the time that is just directly before Jesus' ministry and birth. After all, when we think about Advent, Advent, by definition, is simply a time of expectant waiting or preparation. Doesn't have anything specifically to do with Jesus' birth. You know, it's Advent is not just about pre-Jesus' existence. Advent is an everyday reality. And so today we're invited to explore how these fairly common Good Friday texts illuminate the theme of Advent, this feeling of expectant waiting. And then to discover how these texts might bring hope that we might not have seen and noticed when we read them on Good Friday. So, just to set the stage, a few moments ago, right, we heard about Pilate's first interrogation of Jesus. Now, a few things about Pilate that is important to remember, because maybe it's been a while since we've thought about this guy. So, Pilate was the Roman prefect of Judea. And the thing about Pilate is, before he could order an execution, his task was to uncover a charge that broke the Roman law. So throughout the trial, if we were to continue reading that, we'd find that he really struggled to find a Roman law that kind of fit with what Jesus had done. He interrogated Jesus again and again. He even tried to release Jesus a couple times. But the crowd was relentless in their desire to have Jesus killed. Now, there's another thing that you need to remember about Pilate. We have to remember that Pilate's primary role as the prefect of Rome was to keep the peace. He needed to keep the peace to impress the emperor. The emperor didn't want to get involved with things in Judea, so he needed to keep the peace. Pilate also needed to keep the peace so as to maintain the flow of taxes from this outpost into the center where the emperor was. And he needed to keep the peace ultimately to retain his power. Now, the role as peacekeeper is actually kind of what puts Pilate in a tough place in this reading. I mean, from the perspective of moral authority and perhaps even the Roman law, Jesus had done nothing wrong. However, structurally speaking, Pilate had an obligation. He had a duty to the system of the Roman Empire. And on top of that, he had a vested interest in keeping that facade of peace, or perhaps he would be the one who would be dead. Now, what we have to remember about this system of Rome is that the Roman system was designed to use violence, oppression, and domination to keep peace and control. That was the whole system. It was a military-focused system. And frankly, genuine peace, this was not the interest of the Roman Empire, but rather the control and the submission of others under the guise of peace was their chief and sole pursuit. So, what we have here is ultimately, in the end, Pilate did exactly what the Roman system has set out to do and was designed to do. Because Pilate kept the appearance of peace through the use of violence. And so that's what's, I think, a little bit interesting about today's reading when we have Jesus and Pilate talking back and forth, because in this interrogation and in the interrogation to come, Jesus doesn't try to mount a defense, right? I think Jesus knew the Roman system. Jesus knew that the facts, frankly, were useless, because the only thing that mattered was artificial peace. And so if the people were rising up, if the temple authorities were rising up, his fate was sealed. There was no other way around it. Because here in Pilate's courts, morality was not on trial. Justice was not what was being sought. The system was designed to keep power and control. And in the end, the ruling that Pilate made was flawless within that designed system, the Roman legal system. Keep peace using violence. Flawless. Does that kind of make sense? Cool. Well, if you've been keeping up with the news, you probably have heard about another ruling that was made on Friday. A ruling made in Wisconsin. And it was a ruling that, I would argue, again, fit the system. If you think back to the summer of 2020, a young man murdered two people and attempted to murder another during a protest in Kenosha. Are most of us familiar with that? What happened on Friday, the ruling? Oh, okay. I think many of us are flabbergasted, shocked, and frustrated at this ruling. Now, some have kind of tried to blame the judge for being biased. Some noted maybe that there's a racist systems were at play. But one of the things that kind of stood out to me, one of the most shocking parts, is the fact that the facts of what actually happened that night were never up for debate. Every single side agreed that Kyle Rittenhouse killed two men and injured a third. Facts. Everyone agreed to it. Yet within the designed system of government, which had been codified in law, If the jury believed that Kyle was acting in self-defense, then he was free and permitted to kill. The system was designed to sanction violence. The system was created to have loopholes for a 17-year-old to take a gun to a protest. The system made acquiring, displaying, and using guns easy. The system taught this young man that killing was acceptable. The system was designed to ignore the surrounding factors of that incident. The system was designed to idolize guns and violence. And so at the end of the trial, it is no wonder that the system worked exactly how it was designed to function. You see, both in this trial that Jesus undertook and that trial that we witnessed in Wisconsin, the outcomes were the result, the direct result of the system's design. They were created by overarching systems, and they were made to be acceptable and legal. But in the end, what we know is that they are not ethical, they are not right, they are not just, they are not God's systems. And this is exactly what is exposed today in the readings from the Gospel of John. Jesus revealed that because the system gives a legal or permissible result, the execution of Jesus at the hand of the Roman Empire, that does not mean that that same system is moral and ethical and just and right. You see, what Jesus revealed was that the legality of executing him under a religious law could actually, in and of itself, be an unethical law. For God's justice is not fully realized in that Roman legal system. And so, too, God's justice is not revealed in the United States legal system. After all, what we find in John's gospel is that God's justice is revealed in self-giving love. God's justice is found in servanthood. God's justice is found over and over again in loving nonviolence. You see, God's justice is not the world's justice. God's justice is entirely different than the systems of the Roman court and the systems found in a Wisconsin courtroom. And that is kind of what makes Advent the perfect time to look at these texts. For in Advent, we hope, we yearn, and we wait. We wait for the time when God's reign will be fully realized. We hope for a time with certainty, a kind of hope that comes knowing that God has been present and God promises to be present again. A hope for a time when robbing another from the breath of life is wrong. We yearn for a time when the racial and sexual and economic and political domination through violent means are erased from our lives and our world. We wait for a time when God's resolve for peace in human communities is universal. This is the essence of the Advent season. But the thing about the Advent season is it's not just a pie in the sky, hope for something, you know, I hope to win the lottery kind of thing. Rather, Advent is clear that it's not an illusion. It's not the illusion of hope, but rather we have a God that has shown up over and over again. The Israelites, Deborah, the Samaritan woman at the well, those who are mourning, those who are rejoicing, those who are yearning for something different. God shows up. And then, because of the fact that we know God has showed up in the past, we live in the promise and the sure certainty that God will show up again. A God who knows what it's like to be caught in a system that is out of control and doesn't feel like it will ever be changed. A God who invites us into the work of bringing God's justice into a world in need of truth. A God of love and nonviolence. And you and I, we as the church, we continue to be invited into this work. And so that you don't think that it's a political rant of Pastor Jason going on, I just want to draw your attention to documents from the early 1990s, where the ELCA, from that point forward, made clear public statement that we need to work on gun control, universal background checks, and tightening up loopholes. Since the early 90s, that has been the focus of the ELCA. The ELCA has gone on to continue to advocate in opposition to the death penalty because of the belief that the death penalty simply responds with violence from responds to violence with more violence. The ELCA also calls for the restraint of violence in a manner that does not continue to repay violence with just more violence. You see, the ELCA for decades has invited us into conversations that explore how violence has shaped our history, including the treatment of Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and then to also acknowledge how this culture of violence, this system created from the very beginning, then goes on to perpetuate more and more violence and creates and propagates systems of injustice. This is our church standing up for the biblical experience that Jesus goes through on his journey towards the execution on the cross. And friends, this is the work of Advent. This is Advent. For we anticipate with that confident hope that God's reign will ultimately bring true justice and genuine peace and abiding love. And as we wait, you and I, we have this amazing opportunity to find places and opportunities to reflect what is to come. That full breath, that full-bodied justice and peace. And so you and I, we are set free to partner with the ELCA and others to find places to work towards nonviolence, to have discussions, true discussions with one another that lament the idol that has become violence in this nation. And then we have the opportunity to use our voices, contact our representatives, talk to elected officials, talk to leaders, work with leaders in the church to create ethical, life-giving systems that our God desires for all of us. And friends, the thing is that all of this is not something that we do out of fear or obligation, but rather this is something that is pure gift. It is a gift from our God who loves us so much, who God himself responded in nonviolent ways on the way to the cross. A God who loves us so much and promises to be with us and love all of creation for all eternity. That is the reign we celebrate this day.